and welcome to Data Driven Finance, brought to you by Envestnet Yodlee. I'm Mike Stiles, and my guest today is none other than Farouk Ferchichi, Global Head of Envestnet Data and Analytics and President of Envestnet Yodlee. Yes, we're going to talk about what Envestnet Yodlee does, but this is more really about Farouk's own fascinating story. You kind of wonder sometimes where fintech leaders come from and how they got where they are. Well, we're going to find that out. And Farouk, I know that this is the first episode of our podcast, and I know you've been particularly excited about getting this product out there for those who are interested in financial data in the fintech space.
Yes. Hi, Michael. Thank you so much. Yes, pretty excited about the opportunity to leverage this podcast as an engagement platform for us, to enable our clients and our prospect and our community who are pretty geeky in the data analytics and software space, and we want to hear their voice. And I think they like many other techie folks, we like to share our ideas and hear what others are working on. And pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're going to be talking to, you know, certainly not just Envestnet Yodlee folks, but many people across the whole fintech and financial data spectrum. So there's going to be a lot for listeners to learn. And we invite them to be sure and subscribe to the show so they don't miss a single episode. But where you're concerned, I suppose my first question would be, where did your story start? Where did you grow up?
That's very personal, Michael. But I was born and raised until I was in middle school in the old West Germany, off of the Rhine River in a little town outside of Bonn, Germany. That's where I started my life.
And what were your early interests in school?
I did whatever my parents told me to do, Michael. As I started making up my mind, I had a very interesting dichotomy between interest in math. I was pretty good in numbers. I remembered a lot of numbers for whatever reason. I liked history. And I think it has to do with the numbers because the way history was taught to us back then, there's a lot of events and there is like the year it happened and who did it and what was the purpose. And I had this weird interest in both mathematics and history.
Was it in college that you got drawn particularly to data and analytics? I mean, where did you start leaning into that?
I think when I went to college, I did applied math and statistics to economics. It's a long-winded name to say econometrics, other people call it. And, it really took me down the path of how do you solve economics problem, financial problems using math and statistics. And a lot of it really led to building algorithms. And in order to test your algorithms, you need to capture data. So it was, that was the foundation of the work. But then really in parallel with that, I started being very interested as I started building programs to collect data. I was very interested in the software industry at large beyond building statistical models. And I started becoming more and more interested in software. And, if the audience cares to know, that's how I developed my interest in software. Data was required for me to build statistics and math models. That's now what is called in so many ways machine learning and AI, and all coming together, the software, the hardware, the data, and the modeling started now these days, 30 years plus later, coming all together nicely. So we're excited where we are and how far the technology came.
Yeah. Well, what were your ambitions? What did you want to do with your life? What did you want to become? Or what kind of company did you see yourself working for one day?
You know, I joke a lot with my daughter and her friends, even at work here. I say, my plan A was not really to become anything of a corporate player. I really always wanted to become a football player or a soccer player, like we say here in the United States. But, you know, I had to have a plan B, Michael. And, you know, plan B was stay in school. And so along the way, straight out of college, I really, you know, took a job as a junior economist, which was kind of the closest thing to materialize all the learning I've done. I worked in a large NGO, fully funded by the United Nations. And I had a great, meaningful job that, if you recall back in the 90s, there was this movement of microloans. And these microloans were given to, focused on supporting female careers, both professional and financial independence, both in the urban area and the rural areas. And in the urban areas, we focus on giving microloans to those females who took a vocational path in their academic kind of life, and they graduate from the vocational programs, and they go get an apprenticeship, and then where their career is going. And we were offering microloans, and my job was to kind of build these economic models to figure out where exactly we should focus on the funding and where are the areas that needed most the help from the United Nations across Southern Europe and North Africa and some parts of Africa as well. From there, obviously, it was a very rewarding job as far as mission goes, but, you know, it wasn't financially rewarding, and I was starting in my early career, and, you know, you have that ambition to kind of progress in your life and make some money. I was working on the side, on this website. If you remember the .com, my daughter will say, "What is a .com, Dad?" I was doing a .com. Me and a couple of my friends were working on a website. And, you know, it picked up really big in 96. And we, one of the large oil companies really liked it. And they bought it from us. And that was my way into the United States. And, you know, we sold it. We integrated. And when I came to the United States, I was very, very impressed by the balance between the knowledge of theory and the practicality and the applications of theory. And I was drawn to that, and the entrepreneurial spirit and the competition and all of that. And it was fantastic to kind of be part of this, the United States growth and seeing the fintech grown from what it was, the dot-com era, to where it is right now, the AI era. So I changed career a little bit, and I went to financial services. And I've been attached to the financial services now for the past 23 years or so. And it's been fantastic. I've done so much work in financial services across credit risk management, marketing. It's always about data analytics and technology combined. So a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've had great data roles at companies like Citi, Toyota, Gartner, USAA. And what we're talking about there really is true internal business transformation, which is no easy exercise. In your work with those companies, what did you learn about the most effective ways to sell transformation internally, to get buy-in for it and to see it reach its full potential?
Yeah, I mean, I think understanding your role in the ecosystem is really important. Everyone has an opinion, and everybody has a vision, and everybody has a roadmap and a specific set of objectives. And the bigger the company, the more federated it is, the more power centers there are. To effectively be successful, especially in a C-suite role, in a brand new area like data and analytics and digital, it is really important to connect the dots, align with everyone, and create what I call the hub and spoke model, where you are orchestrating the success of everybody else and empowering them with the data, with the analytics and the technology to be able to deliver. And I think that worked for me very well, like vis-a-vis command and control and centralization and trying to do everything. rather than figure out how to become an enabler for other people to success. And this is where, you know, I spoke a lot in the early days of the chief data analytics officer about this idea of data democratization. And who knew back then that that would be very important throughout our life, because data size and volume and velocity has exploded over the past 20 years with the compute power and the technology. Being able to centralize that and manage it through command and control has not been successful in the past, and definitely not now. And so that is a formula that worked for me, is by defining a common purpose and by being a steward of enabling others across the ecosystem to learn the language of the data, giving them the tools to actually create value out of it, but also surround them with the governing tools, so security, data quality, et cetera, model governance and alike, so they can not hurt themselves with this great weapon of empowerment and data knowledge.
Yeah, and InvestNet, Yodlee, is about data and using data to help people achieve financial wellness. How would you personally define financial wellness, though? Is that the same for everyone?
No, it's not the same for everyone. And financial wellness is really, from our perspective, what got me this job at InvestNet. I met our CEO, Bill Krieger, our group CEO, and he, you know, wrote this paper about intelligent financial life. And I read it and I was like, I need to work for this company, because it really, for me, hit home around what it is a meaningful mission to serve people. And what better way to serve people, among other things, is to help them better manage their finances and achieve some level of financial wellness. And the way we think about it is it's a spectrum of where you are in your financial journey, right? You have people who need the support in terms of understanding their money. So these are budgeting tools, the cash flow management tools, right? There are some people who are more savvy in that space, and they're really needing the support around how to invest their next 50 cents or next dollar, right? And that's about saving. But then when you start mastering the art of savings, you graduate to that level of, you know, I need to invest. And not everybody is going to be ready to have a financial advisor and have quite a sizable amount of money to invest. So micro investing, right, becomes an opportunity there. And then, you know, when you get into a micro investing and become savvy, and over time you have saved and you've encountered some success in micro saving, you may have developed enough cash and knowledge and confidence to be able to go a little bit bigger and engage with a more traditional financial advisor to help you invest your money more thoughtfully and carefully. And as you progress in your financial journey, you know, we can, you know, talk about asset allocation. You can talk about trust planning. You can talk about many other things. And that's what InvestNet we do here. And that's what financial journey for me is. How do we develop the data, the analytics, and the technologies to enable consumers and individuals in any place in their financial journey, whether they're still in high school or a college student starting their career, their financial wellness journey, or somebody ready for retirement or even beyond that, thinking about trust planning and what have you.
I mean, in your current leadership role at InvestNet, Yodlee, it sounds like that is the vision that you're trying to make happen there, that interconnected, intelligent financial data ecosystem. Part of that, and part of the data, and what we're hearing so much about today is AI. And you were early, early in the game of AI. You've had your eye on it for so long. What do you think of where it is now, and what's the best role for it to play in financial management and advisement?
Yes, we have been, as you said, Michael, native AI, machine learning. because we had to in our company. We focused on deploying it really in taking all the data we collect from our customers and turning it into useful, meaningful data that can be leveraged for the financial wellness experiences that we produce. And so we've been at it for some time. Now, obviously, with the LLMs and the Gen AI and the new techniques, both to build AI models or to leverage them from an open source point of view, we see it we need to continue to grow it. We are continuing to grow it, to use that data, to create what we're referring to as intelligent financial wellness experiences. It's not enough to create a budgeting experience or a cash flow experience to help people, but imagine it's a guided, intelligent experience that adjusts the budgeting or the cash flow or the saving experience or what have you to meet your specific need near real time as you are evolving your life financial journey, which changes from one day to another for the better or the worse, and being able for that guided, intelligent experience to help you. Now, AI is great, but AI needs data, and it needs quality data, and it needs to be governed data, trusted data. And you know, like any other great tools, it can be directed for the positive and it can be directed for the negative. And this is why there is a balance between leveraging it to create value for the end consumers and humanity, like deploying an intelligent financial wellness. It is welcome. But you can obviously point AI and data to not so good things. And this is where the AI ethics and the AI governance and the AI morality are an ongoing discussion of how far we take and apply this. So it is governed, controlled in a way that serves us and humanity in a positive way. And that's an ongoing dialogue about the lines and and where you draw the lines and who crosses them and why. And it's not a black and white discussion, as you know.
Right. And it's not even something specific to the fintech world. These are things that we're grappling with across all kinds of verticals. As if you're not doing enough, you sit on the boards of two nonprofits. Walk us through what those are and what their missions are.
Yeah, I am. it's one small little way to give back to the community that really has served me personally. I serve, like you said, in two boards. One of them is really focused on capturing, raising funding, capital to enable minority small entrepreneurs, focusing in the Detroit, Michigan area right now, but the vision is grow it at the national level. And, you know, minorities are different classes. We're starting with the African-American minority young entrepreneurs. And the program obviously has a vision for growing that beyond into other minority classes. The other one is really about focusing on everyone, but we focus more specifically on females, particularly refugee females who come to this country. You know, they don't know English, for example. And they need to learn because they have kids going to schools, as an example, and they need to meet with the teachers, and they need to have a dialogue about their kids. They need to have a dialogue about their financial lives. And they don't know English, and they need the support. So we provide this free teaching English to females in particular. There are refugees from Yemen, from Ukraine recently, and a few other parts of the world.
Sounds like fantastic work. Well, if our listeners want to find out more about what InvestNet Yodlee does or even follow your adventures, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yodlee.com and also LinkedIn, Yodlee, InvestNet Yodlee, as well as you can follow me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active and I'm pretty responsive. Believe it or not, I get a lot of followers through there, and I follow a lot of people as well. So, yeah, absolutely.
Great. We've got it. And again, if you want to see how aggregated financial data might be of great use in your business, go take a look at resources.yodlee.com/podcasts. And we'll see you next time on Data-Driven Finance.